You can see my award-winning climate comedy show Spoilers at a festival near you, provided you live near or are going to McCunclith or Wells comedy festivals. More dates added soon near you, conceivably, who knows what might happen.
And if you are at Mac, come and see ComCom Redacted live at 4 p.m. on the Saturday.
Go to stuartgoldsmith.com and click the very attractive banner image to find out more.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is a podcast from comedianscomedian.com.
This is the Comedian's Comedian Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Stuart Goldsmith, and this is part two of my conversation recorded at the LA Podcast Festival earlier this year with the absolutely marvellous Mr. Jimmy Pardo. Here's Jimmy.
There's two main angles of things I want to talk about. One of them is the panel show series that you did, I saw on YouTube right now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't know about that. And I got chatting to someone at the podcast festival, and I said I was interviewing you, and they said, oh, my God, have you seen Right Now?
It's so good. Oh, seriously?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's nice to those people.
And it is really going to appeal to the people that listen to this show as well.
Is it really?
Yes. Describe what the show is. I saw an episode. I saw the Kumail episode this morning.
Ah.
But just describe it for us. How long ago was this?
Oh, when did we do Right Now? God, it might be 2 years ago now. It might be 2 years ago.
Okay, so to describe the show.
Well, it was a guy named...
It's such a great idea. I really enjoy it.
It's not mine.
Is it not?
No, believe it or not. In fact, I'm going to give you a full credit. A guy named Boris Hamilton. It was his idea. His premise was somebody asked him to host a comedy show. Like, hey, do you want to host Tuesday night? Blah, blah, blah. And he's like, well, I don't have any jokes. Hey, maybe if I had three people on stage writing my jokes for me. And he claims it didn't work for him. So he said to me, hey, do you want to do – they called it the writer's room. He goes, do you want to host the writer's room? And I was like, oh, that thing that you do? And he goes, yeah. I go, yeah. I've already said I don't know how to write a joke. So
sure.
I said, I love that idea. And I love hosting. I love it. I love hosting a TV show or a live show in any capacity. So when he said, do you want to host it – and this was just doing a live show at the UCB Theater here, the Upper Exeter Brigade Theater here in Los Angeles where I came out to do a monologue. Hey, welcome, everybody. Then please welcome a stand-up. A stand-up comes out. They would do a set. Now, while that comedian is doing a set, three writers are on stage. So you're seeing them do it. It's nothing's pre-planned. They're writing, I don't want to say roast-style jokes, because that's not fair to anybody involved. But some of them could be roasted.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. They're basically trying to slam the comic based on his appearance or his act or whatever. Yeah.
And but with that wink, where nobody's really getting hit hard.
Sure.
And so the three of them would write the joke on comment cards. I would say, how about another big hand for Jerry Seinfeld?
Sure.
Jerry never did a show. Another hand for Jerry Seinfeld. And then Jerry would walk off. And then I would go through these index cards and then just read the index cards, read the jokes that these three writers wrote.
It's so funny. And it's perfect for you.
It's perfect for me. Yeah. So then we and thank you. So we did a couple times live. And then Matt Belknap, who's my the co-host on my podcast, we ended up kind of restructuring it a little bit. And then we agreed, the three of us, even though Boris – it was really his baby – Boris was like, hey, if we could ever sell this, you know, the three of us will do it. So we did a pilot for Comedy Central, and it was called Jimmy Pardo Needs Jokes. And, you know, with any sort of thing, honestly, what we delivered I don't think worked for TV. It was a great show, and because of the restrictions of commercial breaks and stuff like that, I don't think we found it. Mm-hmm. And we didn't get picked up. So then Chris Hardwick's Nerdist channel loved it on YouTube, and I said, well, why don't we do – that for when we do about six episodes of that, or however we did. And Chris was like, yeah, let's do it. So we ended up doing these short little mini versions of
this. 16 minute episodes, aren't they?
Yeah, they're about 16 minutes.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
And where it's one comic, I come out, hey, everybody, blah, 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 please welcome Kumail Nanjiani. And then while Kumail's up there, there's three writers writing my jokes. And then he walks off.
And you give the winning writer... Oh, sorry, go on. You finish the thing.
Right. I give the winning writer $50.
A crisp $50 bill in the form of 4 tens and 2 fives.
That's right.
God, that made me laugh.
Thank you. And it was. We called it Right Now for the internet because of legal reasons. But I still maintain that's a great show, and it's a great vehicle for what I do, because I get to, in that case, for me, because I'm so reactionary. Yes. With my comedy, I'm able to react to their jokes,
yes,
good or bad.
Yep,
react to the comedian. Uh-huh. Like everything really plays into my strengths.
It throws everything to you and in a very open way. So it's not like you're on stage doing someone else's jokes that have been written for you, because we completely see that process visibly, and you get to slam. It's like a comic doing a joke competition where the audience have done I don't know if they have that over here. It's a way of kind of padding
a
show. So you get before the interval. You don't have intervals here, so that's probably why not. But halfway through the show, the MC will go, okay, we'll have an interval now. 15 minutes, get a drink, stretch your legs, complete this joke. You know, and a topical figure from the news crossed with a vegetable, you know, is like a vegetable because, and everyone will put a name in that. You know, write a little joke in the hat.
I love that idea.
Yeah, it's fine. It's absolutely fish in a barrel for the MC, because then you can just read through, you go back and you go, here's the joke competition, you read through them, and if they're funny, you get the laugh. And if they die, you slam them.
Right.
You know,
so it's a win.
Absolutely.
And that's kind of what this show is. It's like if it's a clunker, I can call them out on it being a clunker. And if it's great, you get a big laugh on that guy's joke.
Yes.
And I look over and give the little nod, like, good to go. And also at the top of it, I get to riff with the three, because they're generally either, you know, the professional writers or comedians.
Yes.
And so I get to riff with them. It's a shame we didn't find it right for television. But thank you for liking it. What
are you developing with Conan's company at the moment? Can you talk about it?
I can't, because we don't really know. We're kind of bouncing around with a bunch of different ideas. We have to. There's a lot of different levels of executives we have to go through, and sometimes we make it through three levels with an idea. Sometimes it's one. The most recent one, we're at the finish line, but then we have to see. You know, it seems like everybody likes one idea, but now that idea needs to be fleshed out and created.
And the drive for you in making that stuff, in trying to create TV show formats, is what? Is it primarily a financial drive? Is it an ambition, kind of like career status thing?
Boy, that's a great question.
Because you're someone who, I mean, we've not even talked about the podcast, Never Not Funny, which has been going since 2006. Six, was it?
Okay. March of 2006, yeah.
And we'll get onto that for a second. We'll put a pin in that. But you are like you're busy and happy.
I am busy and happy. I agree with that.
So why are you trying to jump through hoops for a TV person to get a TV show out there?
Yeah, I mean, look, obviously the internet's the now and as well as the future, but it's still TV. And I grew up watching TV, and I grew up wanting to be on TV. I don't necessarily want to be famous. I like when people recognize me, and I like when people tell me they're fans of mine. I mean, who the hell doesn't? But, you know,
There's got to be some Americans out there with your face tattooed on them somewhere.
Well, I would imagine if there's one, they are the craziest human being in the world.
tweet at Concord Pod with your photos of Jimmy Pardo face tattoos on
them. Oh, my God, if somebody has that.
It's because I was chatting to Greg Berendt last night.
And he's got them.
It does my head in. There's people out there with pictures of my face all over their body. Yeah. It's, freaks.
And his show lends itself to that.
I should say. I'm not calling them freaks.
Wait, what'd you go? Oh, it freaks him out. They're
freaks.
Not freaks.
Him out. Yeah.
They're freaks.
We'll get onto that.
You put Greg Berendt's face on your body, you're nuts. Although Greg is, there may not be a nicer man in this world.
He's a lovely guy.
There's still the dream. I still want the Jimmy Pardo show on television. I still want, I guess I just still want that, because I think I'm an interesting personality.
So if you were offered the Jimmy Pardo show on television, and you knew that and I'm going to pull this figure out of the air, if you knew that the figures were going to be something like, what, 5 million? What constitutes a successful show?
I have no idea.
Hilarious. Don't even
5
know.
Million okay. sounds great to
so
me.
So here's my question. You've got the Jimmy Pardo show on TV, and it's 5 million, or you can have the Jimmy Pardo internet show, and it's the runaway success, and it gets 50 million. Which one do you want? Do you still want the TV one because it's TV?
Boy, that's a great – boy, oh, boy. Yeah, but you know what? Because I think it speaks to that. But wait, the internet one is a runaway success too?
Yeah.
I always joke on my part that I'm a bad businessman, because I'm not financially driven. I want money, obviously. I want to live comfortably. But I think I'd take the less money for more eyes. So I know that contradicts what you just asked me, because if the internet one is a runaway success,
yes, But the TV one is presumably going to come with billboards and buses.
Boy, and that makes
image
me sound
and
so
status.
Vain.
No, I don't. No, I don't think so.
I don't know if I'm all about that. I would love it, but I don't think that's what. I don't
There's
think
something
about
me. TV though. Isn't
there is,
there? And that's ridiculous. Given that now TV is it's rats leaving a sinking ship, isn't it?
I don't think so.
Good. He passed the test. Give him the show.
Yeah right? I like how you looked at the recorder as if they were inside there listening
to
us.
I did do that, yeah. But I talked to someone at, who did I talk to? Someone from a TV production company in the UK who said, oh, I really love your podcast. And I was like, oh, really? And you work in development in a thing? This is great.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, but it's crazy because all you guys want to come to TV and you want me to help you get on TV. And I'm here to tell you, you're doing the right thing. No one's watching TV anymore, and you're actually all like, why would you want to put it on TV? And I'm like, because I couldn't answer the question. I was like, because it's TV, right?
It's TV. Don't you understand that? It's, yes. It's what we grew up with. Now, maybe these young YouTube stars and all that, maybe they truly don't care.
These young YouTube stars.
They are.
These young people with the newfangled YouTubes.
Right?
Yeah.
The YouTubes. Right. Well, like we talked about on my podcast today, there's billboards all over LA of their picture of these YouTube stars with their promoting their shows and stuff, their YouTube channels and their two-minute clips and – to me, I that just seems so not what I got the business to do. You know what I mean? I grew up wanting to be Johnny Carson, you know, wanting to be on TV. So that's still the dream, even though and in a roundabout way, while my podcast is very, very successful and I'm grateful for it, getting on TV would get me more recognition, which would bring more people to my podcast.
Yes.
So that's part of it. But at the same time, I want that TV. I want it. You know, I still want to live the dream, I guess, that I had when I was younger of hosting a talk show. And maybe not even a game show. You know, I love game shows. I've always wanted to do that.
Have you ever
really
done that?
I should have lived in England. I should live in London because you guys have a love of the panel comedy game show.
There's not really panel shows here, are there, on TV?
Well, they're starting.
Hardwick's now doing At Midnight, isn't he? Yeah, I saw that. Some great. That's. I mean, it's an absolutely quintessential Hardwick move, isn't it? It's a really good TV show that is actually about the internet in the way that everyone in the UK, as far as I can see, is falling over themselves to make an internet-based TV show.
Well, I wonder why you guys haven't.
He's actually
adapted that yet.
Well, I think because I'm speculating, but I think the way that he does it is that it's about the internet. And if you get it, works for you whether or not you look at the internet.
Mm.
And I think that's the bridge that I haven't seen anyone cross in the UK yet.
When they
make a show, it's like, let's get the best bits of the internet and put them on a half hour TV thing that you can't flick onto and you can't interact with.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? It's like they're still trying to fit a thing into a,
you know, it's
a
funny
round thing
I see
into
those,
a square thing.
Every now and then somebody will call it, hey, we have this UK property that we want to adapt for America. Would you be interested in hosting it? And then I look at it, and it's basically what you just described.
Yeah.
And my answer always is, yes, I'm interested in hosting it. Let's make it work.
Yeah.
So I interrupted you, though. Did I interrupt you? When I said I wish I could live in London game show.
Yes. So you were talking about game shows.
Yes. I've hosted – I had one back in 2005. No, 2003? God, Jesus Christ, I'm old. Called National Lampoon's Funny Money on Game Show Network.
Okay.
And I've hosted minimum one game show pilot a year for the past 20 years.
And why haven't those been picked up? Do you ever get to find out why those haven't been picked up? Or does just you just get a call or don't get a call?
I just get the call going, yeah, they decided not to pick it up.
And you don't get feedback on that? You don't know what it is? You don't know?
You know, it's not right for the network at the time. It's not this. It's not that. And it's, you know, only once have I hosted a pilot and then the show got picked up with a different host.
Mm.
And I understood that. I mean, it angered me and it hurt, but they went with a female and, you know, they wanted to go a different direction. That's fine. I get it. But I've never done a pilot where then it got picked up without me. You know, like it's always been like the whole show's just not going.
Yeah.
And so I don't really know the reasoning because they don't have to tell me because it's they're healing the wounds. You know, they're licking their wounds in the production offices. Trying to figure out, well, Jesus Christ, we gave them a great show. Why didn't they want it? You know?
Yeah.
So
it's, I mean, that's one of the most fascinating lessons, I would say, of the last 12 years of my comedy career is gradually realizing that the people who make the decisions, A, aren't the people who make the decisions. They're trying to please the people who make the decisions.
Right.
Who are trying to please the people who make the decisions.
Right.
And no single person can go, this is how you do it.
Yeah.
Apart from possibly Simon Cowell. And no one wants to do that.
You don't want to make him happy? All right. Well, you know him better than I do.
Yeah.
He's got his V-neck t-shirt. He looks terrific.
Yeah, he's a snappy dress. I can't say it. No, but do you know what I mean? He's like, I was going to, it's that thing of like, if you know so much, why aren't you rich? And I'm like, oh no, he's incredibly rich. He obviously knows something about manipulating something.
He knows something, right?
He gets it on some level, but he's not making work that I'm interested in. So it's still my clumsy metaphor still works.
I think it does. I'm not going to.
Yeah, it's generous of you.
I'm very gracious. I'm a good man.
So let's talk about the podcast.
Yes.
Why now? You will have you'll have stock answers for this because you will be. I mean, everyone will have talked to you about the podcast.
Yes.
For their own podcast, and yes. Podcasts will eat themselves. Do you think? Do you think that we're all? I mean, I've been targeting American comics who also have their podcasts because those are the American comics I know in the UK.
That makes sense.
And also, I think there's a sort of a sense that, oh, maybe some of Jimmy's listeners will discover mine because they're podcast listeners.
Well,
there's like a finite amount of podcast people.
I could tell you that and this speaks to how great my fans are. I would be surprised if my episode doesn't get you the best response as far as new people listening to it.
Okay.
New for you.
Great.
Because okay. I think my fans follow me on other shows.
I've chosen Jimmy wisely as a target. Yeah, good.
Yeah, I know what you're up to.
And you, look, we'll get to the fans in a second because there's a lot to talk about with the fans. But you, yeah, is podcasting, what's the, before I can ask you what the future of podcasting is, we've got to introduce your show. So the show is you and three people chatting?
No, it's me and my co-host, Matt Belknap. We're the regulars.
Okay.
And then the other cast members, for lack of a better way to describe it, is our video producer, Elliot Hochberg.
Very polite, man.
And then our intern, he's basically a paid guy, but it doesn't make a lot of money. But he takes our notes and stuff like that, Garen Cockrell.
Yep.
So we're the four that are always here. And then I have a guest. And the guest, more and more just kind of joins in the fun.
Yeah.
And whereas maybe before there was more of a spotlight on that guest of, Q&A sort of stuff. But now it's almost like you're doing Never Not Funny, which is the name of my podcast. You're just kind of jumping into this stupid fun world that we have.
And yours, as podcasts go, yours is, I mean, we're sitting effectively in a radio studio. This is, we've got angled mics and all the rest of it. You've been doing it long enough. You've got you've got a regular setup for it. And the show itself is like a radio show. There's a lot of people involved. There's production values.
Yeah, thank you.
You know, there's jingles and advertising. And, it's not just some guy recording a thing under his duvet, where I'll be doing my links later today.
Is that true?
Yeah, often. Yeah, it's a really good sound baffle.
That you use the word duvet.
What would you call it?
I
wouldn't have them.
Well, no, we have duvets.
Do you? Duvets.
Wait,
no, I like that you call it that.
Well, that's more than one. What'd you call it?
No, I said, no, I thought I was remarking on the different stress. I would call it a duvet, and you'd call it, you just duvet. Call it a duvet.
Yeah, I do say duvet. Yeah.
This is the best bit of the show.
Well, it reminds me of Robert Goulet. So I think in my dumb head, I have to think of Robert Duvet. Sorry. So, wait, what?
Production values?
Oh, I was going to tell you this.
Yeah.
When we started in 2006, that's what grabbed... initially, there weren't a lot of podcasts in 2006. Mm. And the ones that were there were kind of tech related. There might have been some comedy ones. There was, Dawn and Drew were doing one. They were a team. And Keith and the girl were a team but they were East Coast driven. And there really wasn't a podcast scene here on the West Coast. And when Matt Belknap asked me to do it, I was doing a live talk show at the UCB Theater, an untelevised talk show at the UCB Theater. And Matt was like, let's turn that into a podcast. And I knew Ricky Gervais's podcast, of course. And so I was like, okay, I don't know what that is, but let's do it. And then we sat at my dining room table but I said to Matt, I go, I want to treat it like a radio show. And, I want to treat it like it's a professional show. Let's get good equipment. Let's do it the right way.
Because there seems to me that, there is a parallel there between that and you wanting to be on TV.
Yes.
Let's do it properly.
Let's do it
I want
properly.
To be that guy.
That's exactly right. And I grew up idolizing these guys in Chicago named Steve Dahl and Gary Meyer. There's also a radio show out of Indianapolis, the Bob and Tom Show. And there's other great ones across the country too. But those were the two that I always found like they whether you like their shows or not, that's not what I'm speaking of. I do. But they're great broadcasters. And so it was like, I'm going to take my knowledge of having listened to them and having been on Bob and Tom, listening to Steve and Gary, for years and idolizing them, being on Bob and Tom, I'm going to take that knowledge and try to do the best radio show I can under this new word of podcast. And we delivered a great sounding professional. People tell me I'm funny, a funny show. And all of a sudden, iTunes responded to us. You know, the guy, Scott Simpson at the time, was like, I don't know who the hell you are, but this is the greatest podcast. And he started featuring us. So, again, we had a lot of tech nerds early on because that's who was listening to podcasts. And so, and then Jesse Thorne, who is a great guy and had a, has had a podcast longer than me, but it was more NPR style driven, more dry interview. And he's a great interviewer and a great guy. And he supported us. So he told his fans about us. And then iTunes. And again, we were more tech and radio fan. And then comedy people started hearing about us because we got featured. And iTunes was really instrumental in getting us noticed. And so we went from, hey, we're around my dining room table to, hey, what's this Never Not Funny? Who's the Jimmy Pardo? Not everybody loved us. Of course not. But it was like, it sounds better than any podcast.
Yeah.
It's funny. It's structured, even though it's a loose, stupid show. So we went from nothing to being featured on iTunes to being the number two podcast competing with The Onion for a while. It was great. And we didn't have a lot of numbers because nobody did. There weren't podcasts.
What kind of numbers were they in the early days?
You know what?
Do you have any idea?
5,000 people?
Okay.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't even remember because it's 10 years ago now, you know, nine and a half years ago.
And do you know, I always feel edgy about asking people their numbers because I don't like to say what mine are. Do you have any idea how many?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't.
But this podcast employs four people?
Well, our intern does not get paid a lot of money. But yes, Matt, myself, and Elliot, we do okay. We do okay. So we do okay. We also have a second show a week that people pay to listen to. We have a paid.
You have a premium show.
Yeah, we have a premium show.
Okay.
Which we call the Players Club, and if you're a member of the Players Club, you get video of both shows for the week.
Yep.
And a second show.
Okay.
But if you just want to listen free, you can.
Yeah.
Through Earwolf is who network we're with.
Okay.
But you know, we were free for 2 years, and then the comedy boom hadn't happened yet, the comedy podcast boom, and we went behind a paywall where the only way to get us was by paying to listen to us. And then the comedy boom happened, and we got left behind.
Yeah.
And so
okay.
Then
– it's incredible, isn't it? It's the most exciting – one of the most exciting aspects of podcasting, apart from the incredible ability to build your own tiny empire
– right.
– is like a microscopic little, I make all the decisions, I'm the boss. I mean, that's hugely exciting to stand-ups who are used to – like, it's really the only other medium in which you get to be like a stand-up. You just – I've decided this, so there
and
it is.
And you don't even – in this case, you don't even have to make the club owner happy.
Yeah, right.
You don't even have that gatekeeper.
Yes.
You've got nothing.
So this is Jimmy Pardo. I mean, there's not much more to say on this. It's part two of an episode. You already know the drill. Maybe you've listened to them back to back, which means that you'll recognise the audio surroundings that I'm in as not having changed on account of me rattling through these in one go. Remember, you can support the show by buying a T-shirt at comedianscomedian.com/merch. You can then take a picture of yourself fully clothed wearing that T-shirt in the place where you listen to the show and email it to me or tweet it at ComComPod. And also via comedianscomedian.com, you can make a one-off donation via PayPal or Moonclerk if you're a non-PayPal user. Or you can just make a one-off donation to support the show. And I really appreciate those. They really help me do crazy stuff like travel to America under my own steam and gatecrash a festival. More fun things like that coming up soon, I hope. That's all for now. Enjoy the dying embers, the closing moments of my conversation with the absolutely brilliant Jimmy Pardo.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently, so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
We're all just making it up.
Yeah.
And when you meet other podcasters, you go, oh, what box do you tick on the side? Oh, right, because I didn't know either. Like that. Yeah. It's very exciting.
I remember many, many years ago, I was at a party at the house of the people that created Dynasty, the TV show Dynasty back in the 70s. But it was at their house. It was a party. My in-laws are friends with them. My wife is friends with these people. And there was a guy, he's not a comedian, and I said, I forget his name now. He was a great guy. And I said, what do you do for a living? And he goes, you know, I was in radio for a lot of years and I got out and I'm doing a thing now called a podcast.
Yeah.
And I went, wait, I have a podcast. He goes, what?
Yeah.
And we literally bonded. His is not a comedy podcast.
Yeah.
It was a travel one based out of New Orleans. And but I remember like we both couldn't believe that we met the other guy doing a podcast. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like that's how it was at one point. And then that boom happened. You know, certainly the comedy podcast boom. And and you know we're lucky that we have this loyal fan base and here we are. I'm talking to you about it.
So your persona in the podcast is exactly the same as your persona on stage?
It's pretty close. In fact, it's really strengthened my stand-up persona.
Has it really?
Yeah, it really has.
Oh, because it's effectively stage time. It's hours and hours and hours
it
of
is.
Additional stage
and
time.
And it's me talking and it's me, you know, reacting to what other people have to say or do and
playing with others in a way that you don't get to as a stand-up.
Right. So now I try to bring this to the stage. Like, again, it was another moment of growing as a stand-up of, hey, you know how loose you are on the podcast? Let's start doing that in the club. And I am loving stand-up again. I mean, I'm like, you know, as we all do, we go through those phases where it's like, oh, the fuck, you gotta, you know, oh, I gotta get on the stage and you gotta, you know, we go through those phases and it's okay. Everybody does it the real job too. People are like, I can't believe I gotta go to work today. But we feel the same way. We're not just clowns.
Are you still traveling a lot as a stand-up, given that you have the podcast and you had the opening for Conan act when you were doing the opening for Conan bit?
Still going out once a month.
And going out for you is what? Is like a weekend,
Friday,
like
Saturday.
A Thursday? Oh, Friday, Saturday.
Okay. Although I just did a Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
So you're keeping your hand in. But
that's the best way to put it.
Yeah.
I'm keeping my hand in because once, you know, I remember, and I don't think it's the case anymore because I think there's a lot more guys my age, you know, in their 40s. That are traveling doing stand-up. But I remember when I was in my 20s, the guys that were my age seemed like dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, God, why is that guy still doing clubs?
Mm.
But that's not the vibe now, at least here in the States. You know, because we're all – Todd Glass, me, Doug Benson, Greg Behrens, Paul Tompkins, Patton. We're all in our 40s. And
yeah.
We're all – I'd like to – I take me out of the equation. Greg proves they're the best of the best.
Yeah.
And we're all 40. And – We should be the ones that are headlining the comedy clubs, and but I still have in my head, I don't want to be the dinosaur. So I got to stay in the clubs. I don't want to be the guy that disappears from the clubs, even if I'm successful in other areas.
Because hang on, let me just break this. So
yeah,
is the strata at the moment? Are there the big guys who are doing movies and don't need to tour anymore? Then beneath them, different to them,
right?
Are people who are big touring acts like Patton? You know, he'll just here's 50 gigs, bang, sold out.
Or Brian Regan.
Or Brian Regan, absolutely.
Is the perfect, or Jim Gaffigan, although Jim has a TV show now.
Yes,
but Brian is the prime example of a guy who's not on TV.
Yeah.
But he fills theaters all over the country, and he fills it because he's the best of us.
Yes. And then there are the podcasters who are filling maybe not theaters, well, maybe some theaters, but they're filling them because of the exposure from their podcast and the loyalty of their fan base. And then there are guys who are headlining the clubs who don't have successful podcasts.
Who have to, and
they're still on the road grinding.
And they have to prove they're funny, which is still...
Yes, whereas you have a following.
You have a following.
Cannot wait to hear what you've got.
Come out, here we go.
And they come and see your stand-up show, and they're like, oh, it's Jimmy, but he's really going for the jokes.
Exactly. And it's night and day. Like, when I do a show that is, like, I can tell instantly it's not podcast fan heavy. And it's like, oh, I gotta prove myself to this audience.
Yeah.
I got to let them know.
Well, that's my next question then. Is it when you're performing to a podcast audience, do they just roll over and let you tickle
them?
They
don't necessarily. It's not that easy.
Okay.
But they're supportive.
Okay.
They know me well enough to know there's going to be some funny. I might meander for a minute or two trying to find it. And usually that's entertaining in itself, I'd like to hope. But they'll stay with me. Whereas I think if I just went to – like if you fill the room with a group of people that they've never heard of me in their life, it might take a little bit of time to find the footing with that crowd. And as, you know, as funny as I am, and as you know, my days of hit and miss are pretty gone. You know, they're mostly hits than misses. But it might take 5 minutes to prove to these people I'm funny, and I don't want to experience that. I don't need that at all.
I don't want to have to work hard for 5 minutes.
No, I don't. I don't. Yeah.
I know you don't sit and write jokes, but do you ever write down the stuff?
Yes.
When you're doing, you've got the stuff, you've worked it up on stage, you write down, okay, the sweat a bit, the haircut bit, bullet points.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're writing them down, do you get anything out of the process of writing them down? Or is it just a case of recording it so you don't forget it?
I get glee. I feel like I've some sort of satisfaction that I've done something. Like, good.
That exists now.
That exists now.
Provable.
Yeah. That's exactly it. Yes.
I do that. That's, for me, that's a big trap because I write on stage and I write off stage. And like last year I decided I'm not writing on a laptop anymore because it's a trap. Because you just cut and paste. You convince yourself you've done some work. It's not work. Do you know what I mean? It's prose. It doesn't mean anything. So now it's just in a book, and hopefully soon it will just not be in a book. But I do find that it's like writing a to-do list. And the first thing is write this list, and you're like, I can already cross that out. You know, I mean, like a satisfied feeling.
What a great example, too. Yeah.
What is your favorite bit of your material that was given you as a tag by another comic?
Oh boy! Oh man!
It's a good question, right?
It's a great question, and I can't think of any at the moment. You know what's funny? I thought about this one. This was from my open mic days, where I was doing it. The TV show Win, Lose, or Draw. Do you remember that?
Yes, I'm familiar.
That happened over there.
Yes, we did have. We had a.
You know, it's basically Pictionary, or whatever. And,
yeah.
But
can you imagine the pitching meeting? It's basically Pictionary, whatever. Oh yeah, fine. We'll do that.
We're right on that. So I was doing the joke. I don't even remember my part of it,
mm-hmm.
but I remember it was okay. And a guy named Vince Maranto, a really funny guy out of Chicago, said, "He goes, I love that thing. I like what you're doing with Win, Lose, or Draw." What if you said it's a line, when you say it's a line, it's a stick, blah, blah, blah. What instead if you said it's a line, it's a stick, it's the Battle of Gettysburg. Like, go even, and again, I was an open micer.
Yeah.
And he said if you went even bigger with it, because mine was kind of like, it made sense.
Yes.
It was funny, but it made sense. But if you go, you know, it's a line, or it's a line, it's a stick, it's the Battle of Gettysburg.
Yes.
And I remember thinking, what a great idea.
Yes.
That's like, because again, I'm a green comic. I'm brand new, open micer, trying to find my way. And that was one of those eye-opening things of, oh, there, that, you know, I'm naturally funny.
Yes.
But you have to craft it.
Yes.
And that was a learning moment for me. So I don't know if that's my favorite tag of all time, but it was a great example.
A droplet of someone else's ink in the water, or something, like a bit of different color that then you go, oh, that's a new.
And he's been there. He's been in the trenches. He's a funny guy working. And
a funny guy working. That phraseology just sounds like Dead Man Walking. He's a funny guy working.
But the funny part is, so that was between shows on a Friday night. And then I was doing doing a guest set, drop it. I don't know what you guys call them. On the second show as well, doing like a 5 minute set. Cause I wasn't being paid yet. And I couldn't wait to do my new Battle of Gettysburg punchline. Silence. And I did it. And I looked back at him, and the two, we made eye contact and just exploded with laughter on how bad it went. Oh. And he dropped to his knees. I was banging and legitimately banging the stool. No acting, no falseness. Like, literally, I could not control myself from laughing because it bombed so badly.
Just perfect. And then to be able to look in their eyes as that's happening, and you're in the mouth of the wolf, and they're in the wings.
Yeah, yeah. And so, and again, this is 1989. This is that long ago. I wasn't paid yet. I also remember that very moment of being, I like this world. I like this comedy community, this world of, you know, we're in this together. You know, you might be trying to get on TV. I might be trying to get on TV. You might be trying to headline. You might be trying to work this club or whatever. But yet when you're there together, the three of you are those guys, you know, in the foxhole.
Yeah.
And you're together.
Yes.
And I remember, you know, as a guy,
the foxhole is an excellent analogy. Yeah, thrown together. Don't even necessarily know them.
At all.
But they're your brothers now.
But that week,
sisters,
they're your brothers.
Yeah.
And for a guy that, what, you know, didn't fit in high school, like, we're all misfits, which is why we do comedy. But, you know, I didn't fit in necessarily. Tried to find my way. Tried to find my right click. I had a great group of friends right after high school. But it was once getting into comedy that I found my people, so to speak. Mm. But I remember that was so much happened that night with this guy, Vince Moranto. Like, this is it. This is where I need to be doing this. And so, again, to overuse my phrase of long-winded, there's my long-winded answer on what my favorite tag was, even though there wasn't a tag.
Do you think that foxhole mentality exists within the alt comic circuit?
I think so in a different way. I think that although,
and I'm not alt I don't think I am. I feel like I'm too mainstream. There's some cool clubs in London that don't book me, and I sort of feel like they think I'm quite mainstream.
Oh,
so.
But we've kind of become the mainstream here.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Alt,
sure.
Has kind of become, you know, like,
oh yeah, that's a whole, yeah, absolutely.
Those names I've listed. There was a time we were the group at Largo.
Yeah.
You know, here in LA, that, you know, I've always been lucky. Me, Todd Glass. There's a couple more. We were always able to straddle both worlds, where we could do a set at Largo and then run over to the Improv and do a set.
Yes.
Not everybody could. Not all of those guys could. They're brilliant, but they're now the names I just spoke of. We're kind of the guys, yeah. if you look at the Comedy Attic in Bloomington, Indiana, and you look at that lineup, there's really no quote unquote mainstream. Like, when people make fun of stand up comedy,
yeah,
none of those guys are on there. But we're the mainstream because that's who's
they're the people.
We're
the majority
people that are known. We're the majority now.
Yeah. With stuff like this gig, Hot Tub,
yeah,
in LA with Kurt Brownoller
and Kristen Schaal.
I wonder if they have a similar kind of, it's almost like the foxhole idea is, you know, if you're working in, Christ knows, you know, the Chuckle Factory,
right,
wherever, there's an us against them feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder if alt, like, well, you know, really alt, weird, alt, like, and Kurt and Kristen, for people that don't know them, I saw them at Edinburgh a few years ago. They had a handheld laser thermometer, and they were using it to find out who had the hottest crotch in the audience. So it was hilarious.
Right.
It was most definitely alt. Uh-huh, you know, right, what I mean? I wonder if there's an us against them mentality in that kind of world. If there's still, we've got to get through this.
Boy, you know, again, I think because I don't know the answer to that, because I think that world's become the more popular style of comedy. At least in my world it is, you know, so I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if there's an us against them. You know, there used to certainly be the alt scene of there's them, and then there's, you know, we're doing the bookstores. And
hey, on the subject of them, we got off the point, but when we were talking about your podcast listeners, your fans,
yeah,
something I've been really struck by at the Podfest this weekend is that I was expecting the audience to be like a regular comedy audience.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not really. What are they?
Boy, that's a great question, isn't it? Because I don't think any of them are the type that would just, for date night, go to a comedy club.
No.
You know what I mean? But they found podcasts, and they found great podcasts, which are now making them go to the comedy club to see their favorite podcasters or see comedians they've heard on podcasts. But they may not have gone to a comedy club otherwise.
Yeah.
So what are they? They're obviously smart. Unless, yep, they like bad shows. But, right? They're obviously.
Yeah.
But what are they? I mean, because I'll say this. I honestly have not met a dumb podcast fan.
No.
Right?
They're smart. They like computer games. They like, not all of them, but they kind of,
I think there's a misfitness to it.
Yes.
And I mean that complimentary because, as I said, I think all comedians are willing misfits.
Yes.
Like, we're all the, my friend Matt
Weinberg. Maybe they're the same personality types as us. They're just without the kind of the pressure that turned, I don't mean coal into a diamond. I don't mean that. That sounds ridiculous. But the pressure, the force that made us go out on the road instead of hanging out with our friends.
Exactly. I've got to be on stage and have people listening to me.
Yes. They're like us that don't feel that.
That don't feel that need. Like, no, I'm good not doing that. I enjoy being around it.
Yeah.
So I think it's that. Do you think
they're happier than us? They might be. Some of them look
pretty
happy.
Of course they're more happy than us. Happier than us. But yeah, I was joking because last night it was the Emmys here in the States. And so downstairs was that very fancily dressed Emmy party. And they all all beautiful people in their gowns and their suits. And they looked beautiful. And then you go upstairs. It was like two different, like down here. And then here's Misfitville up here.
Yes.
It was.
And the funny thing is a friend of mine stayed at the hotel. Nothing to do with the podcast. Complete coincidence. Bumped into this morning. Hello, Elise Tobin. She's just in town with a friend, like literally on holiday. And she came in and she saw the LA Podfest stuff on the plasma screens downstairs with all the people, with all of the people in the DJs and the tuxes and the dresses. She was like, hey, podcasting's doing pretty well, right? These guys. No, they're here for the Emmys after party. Emmys. Yeah.
You saw those people.
Yeah, incredible. Yeah, yeah.
There was not an ugly human being in that party.
No.
They were the most beautiful looking people. Like if you're dropped from out of town and you're just dropped there, you'd go, oh, Hollywood is all beautiful people.
Yes, absolutely. I was like, oh, Beverly Hills, this completely fits my idea.
Beverly Hills, that makes sense. Then go upstairs and there's guys in Rush t-shirts and flip flops trying to, say hello to me through their stammering, starstruckedness. That's a horrible sentence.
Yeah. In which you stammered out of solidarity.
For them.
Good man.
For them.
But that, yeah, so... Who are they? It's a really like they're kind of super fans, and these are I suppose we're not dealing with podcast listeners. We're dealing with the podcast listeners who will make a pilgrimage to go and see the live podcast festival.
But I'm discovering that with podcasting, and I'm not alone. You're going to hear this from everybody. If I'm in Bloomington, Indiana, like I was, it's not shocking for somebody to come up and go, I drove 9 hours to get here.
Yeah,
I drove 5 hours. This is the closest you've come to my house, so I wasn't going to miss it. So they're. They want to be a part of this world. We're in their ears, at least Never Not Funny is for 4 to 5 hours a week, and so it's like we're almost part of their lives.
Yeah, and that's like the equivalent of a weekday hour radio show every morning. Bang, 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 5 hours. Yeah,
right.
Some maths for you there, Jimmy.
I appreciate that. I didn't know if math was the same over there in the UK. I know you guys have a pound instead of a dollar, so it's very confusing.
And we just pluralize maths. We have maths.
What does that mean?
You do math, and we have maths. It's exactly the same thing.
Is that true?
Yeah, yeah.
You call it maths.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it does. To be honest, coming out of your mouth just then, it did sound pretty weird. But I've always found math to be the weird one.
Isn't that funny?
Isn't it?
Listen, I know we're wrapping up. I wish we had done this. And I mean, I want to say this on the air. I wish we had done this interview before we did my show today. I would have invited, while you were in town, I would have invited you on Never Not
Funny.
Thank you.
Because you're
what we're looking for. You're funny in the bones, to go back to that phrase. And so
thanks,
what a joy to sit and talk to you. And the next time you're in the States, please alert me in advance so I could have you on the show.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
Thank you. For the benefit of the listener, I'm blushing now.
Oh.
And I might well ask Nathan just to nibble that out. It's lovely for you to say so, but at the same time, I don't like broadcasting stuff where people praise me.
Oh, well, why not?
No, let's get a bit LA about this. Thanks, Jimmy.
You leave it. You do what you want. It's your show. Just know that I meant it sincerely.
Let me finish by asking you this. What does legacy mean to you in terms of comedy? What do you want to be your legacy in comedy?
You know what I would want? And it's fairly simple, yet it would mean you know who was great? Jimmy Pardo. Like just that would be enough for me. You know, just to go
old school legacy. That's like that's someone who grew up watching Carson.
Yeah.
That's what they would have said. You know who's great? It's Carson.
Yeah.
That's what you want.
That's what I want. I just want, you know who was always great? Jimmy, you know, like that. Or like
what
20 times a kid. Go ahead.
What would that fulfill in you if you got that? If you walked past a room and you overheard two comics going, you know who's great? Jimmy Pardo.
I think it means that I've done my job. It's like I've
What does it mean to you? Okay, you go, yes, I've done my job. So what? So you're allowed to what? You're allowed to relax? You're allowed to stop?
I'm not gonna, well, this is now you're saying, I guess when I thought legacy, I'm 70 years old and my son tells me, hey, Dad, this guy tells me that you were his favorite growing up, whatever. I don't know. Just the idea of that. Like, I still get a charge out of, I know I'm bouncing all over the place, but I do get a charge when people say, oh, you're my son's favorite comedian, or you're my cousin, Jimmy Pardo, you're my cousin's favorite comedian, which I, of course, because I'm insecure idiot, you're like, oh, so you don't care for me?
I mean, it's a great t-shirt for the show next year.
Right, it is, right?
Your cousin's favorite comic.
Jimmy Pardo. What does it do for me? I guess it just satisfies knowing that I've done my job as a comedian, that I've made some impact on that person's life, that I made them laugh so much that I'm their, I don't know. God, I'm bad at this. Whenever you go deep, I struggle to have an answer. You want to ask me about the craft or anything? I seem to have an answer right away, or some long, stupid answer.
But I'm interested because you have such a kind of facility with it. You've got funny bones. It's second nature. You're just one of those people who in the world comes up with funny stuff. You know, like I used to worry about it a lot. I've never really written on anyone else's show. I didn't particularly have those opportunities early days. And now I sort of, unless it was someone massive, I would kind of go, no, I need to spend my writing time on my own thing. Mm-hmm. So I suppose I had a similar kind of, I'm quite good in the moment. I'm good off the cuff. I'm sort of better when I arrive late at a gig and I'm thrown on stage. Yes. And I don't know what I'm doing.
Is there anything better than that?
Oh my God, I'm at my best. Yes. I used to, as a street performer, my favorite shows
I've stopped listening. As soon as I heard street performer, I had no idea I was talking to a hobo.
How dare you, sir? How dare you? My favorite moments were because you'd literally be holding a case and I was in a double act, and once I was late and my partner, he started building the crowd and I ran in with the case and went, right, what are we doing? And it was one of the greatest shows because it could not have been more on the fly.
It's like, what,
they're already here. Wow.
I love, and I mean this sincerely, there's nothing for me that I love more. I don't want this to happen because it's stressful, but it's stressful up until I arrive. But if the plane is late and I have to go directly from the airport to the club in my airport fly in my plane clothes, it's I call it a snow day. Because you're not in any sort of stage apparel, and it's like, it's almost like they're not going to expect a lot from me because they know I just raced from the airplane.
Yes.
And it's like you've given yourself a break.
You've given yourself permission, haven't you? It's the opposite of the producer going, do a tight five and don't do it. You laugh.
You've given yourself a break.
It's like when the mic breaks and then it's fixed again, but now it's all of you versus circumstances.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's exactly it. So it's like, and if you get up there, if the MC or the au pair, no, not the au pair, what do you call it? The compare?
No, we call it the au pair. The compare.
No, we call it the babysitter, you asshole. Call it a nanny. The compare.
Yeah,
so, but if they say he literally just landed, we're lucky that he did. Please welcome Jimmy Pardo. So they already know it.
Yeah,
you show up in sweatpants. I'm sorry about the sweatpants. My luggage didn't get here.
Yeah,
blah blah blah. They're in on it. You're in on it. It's loose, and you can have so much fun.
I have always had that that fear in the back of my mind. Maybe I'm not a real comedian. I think a lot of us have that. It's one of the things that everyone says. Every comic says backstage on a 1-to-1 basis. I'm frightened I'm not a real comedian, and I feel like the invisible man of comedy. Everyone has said that.
Wow, we all, right?
Everybody has said there'll be some psychological, something bias or whatever. What would you have, and you can interpret this any way you like, what would you like engraved on your comedy gravestone?
On my comedy gravestone?
Yeah.
Boy, I don't, oh God, why on the spot? The brilliant, quick-minded Jimmy Pardo has come up with nothing.
That'll do. Jimmy Pardo couldn't come up with anything for this.
That's it. That would be it. Although I just thought about this. Like an old vaudevillian guy probably thinks it would be funny to put on his gravestone. All of that for this?
Oh, that's nice.
Like they would think that's the funniest thing in the world. Like they have on their grave. Like, I lived all that and this is what happened.
That's very vaudevillian.
Right, it is.
Play me out, Jimmy.
Right, all of that for this? That's me on keyboard. I don't know what I want on my gravestone. It was funny. Always made me laugh. I don't know. He made me laugh. I don't know.
this is what this has reminded me half of my point. What I was trying to tease out from you was this question of why you want to be known as a good guy. You've got this idea that you formed as a kid of Carson, of wanting to be the guy, the proper, he's a proper, he's on TV, he's got a proper show.
Yeah.
You want, when you are, the idea of legacy, not even necessarily you as an old man, but the idea that what happens after you're gone is that people go, at Jimmy Potter, he was always good.
Yeah.
I just interested. I feel like that's the answer. That's the plug. So what's the socket? What is it that's fulfilling?
I don't know, insecurities and desire to be liked, right? Isn't that what it comes down to? Doesn't it come down to that from childhood and growing up of just wanting to be liked and accepted? No?
So are you happy then? You said before you were busy and you were happy. Are you only happy because you're busy, because you're
Well, I think we
hole?
All fall into the we get depressed if we're not busy because we feel like we're not doing anything creative. We're not, nobody's taking notice. Invisible man thing again. I think we could easily fall into that. God, I got nothing going on. I'm, you know, now, the beauty is in this day, you got a podcast and there's always something going on. You could always be creative. But I don't know. I don't know. I always thought it'd be great to just get away from this nonsense of show business. And, you know, the dream would be, you know, when I'm done with it, I'll go open up a record store and I'll be the happiest man alive. Well, luckily, the record business has gone away. So I don't even have that fallback. So I have to just keep pushing forward. I don't know. I do my best to help the young kids in comedy. I try to reach out in the way that people reached out to me. I try to, you know, you said, you know, you want to be a good guy. I try my best to do that. I don't know if I always succeed. I don't know. I just want people, I keep saying, I don't know. I don't know. It's almost the comedy version of just, you want to be thought of as a good person. You know, I left this world leaving it a better place than when I came into it. And I guess I kind of feel that way about comedy. Like, I want to be one of the guys that people think of, you know, who was always great to work with and was always was funny, Jimmy Pardo. And I guess that's it.
Thanks, man.
Did I help you at all?
I liked it. It was good.
All right.
I'm tempted to leave this on just while our faces relax from this kind of, was it?
So that was Jimmy. He very kindly invited me onto his show, which hopefully I'll do if I go back out to LA same time next year and be a guest on his show and a couple of others. What's the comedian's vinyl one? They invited me as well. Comedy on vinyl? Vinyl comedian moments? Something? I don't remember, and I know that I don't have it with me to look up, so apologies, lads. I'll try and remember that next time. What can you do? You can go to my website, stuartgoldsmith.co.uk. You can check out my gig diary and you could go, why isn't there anything on this? Well, it's because I'm sorting out the fucking podcast the whole time. I have got loads of gigs, but I'm never able to put them up with the speed with which I'd like to. My new system of trying to get an hour's podcast admin done every morning of my life and stay on top of it. Hopefully that will bleed over into me updating my gig calendar. But normally I like to tell you what I'm up to. If you go to comedianscomedian.com, you can see a little news widget down the right-hand side. And it is called a widget. I've been learning about WordPress. That's all for today. We should be back with you tomorrow or the next day with Dave Anthony, the last of the four podcasts I recorded out in LA. Dave is a really interesting guy. He's someone who's sort of known for being Mr. Angry and screwing up his own career, and that was happening for 20 years odd, and now he's over it, and he's much more zen, and he's got a kid, and it's a really interesting perspective. Also, he's a bit of a podcast legend, having created the podcast festival, and does a brilliant show called The Dollop with Gareth Reynolds, which I heartily recommend. So, more from him tomorrow or the next day, and that's all for now. Thanks to Jimmy. Thanks to Nathan. Thanks to all the log legends that helped me log these episodes. Your help is much appreciated, and people keep offering their help doing that. And I've had to turn down about 10 of you who said, yeah, I'll help with logging. And I'm like, guys, I'm drowning under the weight of help. So thank you to everyone that's done that. And yes, by all means, think of a number. Just think of a number, guys. Think, oh, this episode was good. The last 140 have been great. Maybe I should donate. Maybe I should think of the number 10. Maybe £10 is appropriate. Maybe £20 is appropriate. Maybe I should donate a tenner a month if I'm feeling flush. I mean, that's kind of crazy, isn't it? Maybe £4 a month. Yeah, that seems reasonable. Go to comedianscomedian.com, pat me on the back with wadges of cash, and I'll speak to you soon. Thanks for listening.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.